It's the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast with your hosts, the Wolf and Action Jackson, who are keeping rock alive by talking classic rock, hard rock, progressive rock, heavy metal, 80s music, early MTV, UK versus US chart success, and much more. This is the home of classic album and live concert reviews, and your place for interviews with artists and legends. You're rocking with the Wolf.
Hey out there, rock and rollers. Welcome to episode number 177 of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast. Brought to you by me, your host, Mac B. the Wolf, and I will be joined, as usual, by my partner in crime from the East Coast of the United States of America, Gary Action Jackson. And we appreciate you tuning in to last week's show from rock comedian Don Jameson, whose new album, No Sleep Till McSorley's, is coming out April 19th in digital and physical forms. Funny guy. We had a really good time talking with him. You know, we loved him as the co-host of That Metal Show. He's still flying a rock and roll flag, and his new album is hilarious. It's exactly what you'd expect from Don Jameson. So go get that, whether you want it physically, digitally, however you want it. It's No Sleep Till McSorley's out April the 19th. This week, we kind of go back to our prog roots here for an album that's turning 40. Now, listeners of the show know that we are pretty big Pink Floyd fans, and we loved having Guy Pratt and Gary Kemp from Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets on our shows, episode number 96, seeing Nick Mason live. We've done some pretty big Pink Floyd album reviews, including this year we did Division Bell as it was turning 30. And to give fair and equal time, we did do David Gilmour's solo album from 1984, About Face, a 40th anniversary treatment. So to be fair, we thought it would only make sense to give Roger Waters the pros and cons of hitchhiking fair treatment. But we didn't know that album at all. Never heard it before. And that's why we invented this On First Listen series, to take albums that had for some reason gotten past us, that were considered classics, or we'd always seen them in the record store, or people had told us about it over the years, and just for whatever reason, we never got a copy, we never heard a copy, and we didn't listen to it. So this is our second On First Listen. First was Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Brain Salad Surgery we did last fall. And this is the first one of 2024 that we're doing for Roger Waters' Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, which is a concept that Roger came up with, very ambitious. He came up with it about the same time as The Wall. And he gave the guys in Pink Floyd the opportunity to choose. Would you rather do the story about a rock star with a wall? Or would you rather do this story about a guy having a midlife crisis and dreaming about having an affair and then having to move to the country? And after some debate, they chose The Wall, which was got to be the best decision they ever made. And then Roger said, okay, the other one I'm going to take and do solo album. So after they did The Final Cut, which is basically leftovers of The Wall in 1983, everyone kind of went their separate ways. David did About Face, and Roger did the pros and cons of hitchhiking. Very ambitious. And because we'd never heard it before, we needed to give it a listen, maybe give it another one, and then tell you our first impressions, what we think about it overall. But because this happened when we were pretty young, we're like 10, 11 years old, we wanted to get someone with some flavor in there. And because we had Chris Slade, who's probably most famous for being in AC/DC or The Firm with Jimmy Page and Paul Rodgers, we had him on to talk about his tour with David Gilmour on the About Face album. We wanted to get someone in to give us a little perspective about this tour, because Roger did employ Gerald Scarfe, who did the visuals for The Wall, and a lot of the people who worked with Pink Floyd to create this massive stage show, but we'd never heard a whole lot about it. So we brought in Lee Dixon, who is Eric Clapton's longtime guitar tech. And because Roger wouldn't have David Gilmour on this tour anymore, he brought in Eric Clapton to be his lead guitar player. And so we got a little bit of insight for Lee, which is pretty cool, about how the stage worked and how everything was running around this big show. Now, you have to listen to the show to see what we think about the record. It is Roger's ego, and it's a big idea. It's a big story. But is it a great album? Does it have great songs on it? That's what we're going to get to here on the show. First, we do have a little bit of business. As always, we like to mention we are proud members of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a family of about 100 different shows. There really is something in there for everyone. I encourage you to check them out at pantheonpodcast.com or to follow on socials at Pantheon Pods. And we are so, so grateful for our sponsor, RareVinyl.com, who's based in the UK, folks, but they ship all around the world and they procure collections from all around the world. And suffice to say, they've got a lot of great Pink Floyd and Roger Waters stuff in their collection, which they'll be happy to ship to you. So go to rarevinyl.com, find something you love, whether it's a first edition print, or it's a picture disc, or it's a tour program. And I got to tell you, the tour program that Lee Dixon showed me from the Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking was really cool. Really gave me a good flavor for how the show went, the set list, the band, what the stage looked like. It's amazing. Maybe you can find one of those at rarevinyl.com, and then you can use code UGLY to save 10% off your entire order. Not just one item, but your entire order. So don't just get one easy-to-find Pink Floyd single that costs maybe 10 quid. Go find the box set that you always wanted. Go find the rare Japanese import. Go find the tour program and ticket stub that you lost from childhood that you want back so badly. Buy them all, and then save a big 10% with the code UGLY at checkout instead of a small 10%. Now back to Roger Waters. I've seen Roger Waters play a few times. I've seen him do The Wall live. I've seen him do a solo act live. And it's quite a production. So it would not be a huge surprise to learn that The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking was a big production as well. Using some state-of-the-art technology as far as the cameras go. Big stage setup. Blow-up dolls. Roger moving to different places. I think it's basically supposed to be set in someone's bedroom. And I think seeing it live really changes your perspective versus just hearing the album. At least it did a little bit for us. And the insight from Lee Dixon as far as the way that the tour worked is invaluable. We think you're really going to like that. So let's jump into it. This is On First Listen, Roger Waters, Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, here on The Wolf. All right, so let's just jump right into it, Jackson.
All right.
We started this On First Listen series so we could have a way, a format, to get to know albums that we've kind of been familiar with for a long time, that we've heard about, we've seen them in record stores, we've maybe had people say, hey, you should check this out, or this is a classic, and for whatever reason, we just never had the chance to listen to it, maybe didn't even hear it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to find a way to be like, all right, how do we explore these albums that have somehow gotten by us? And so we created an On First Listen series. We may have to start the On Final Listen series after today. Because there's no way I want to listen to this again.
This is the only thing I want to listen to from now until the end of time.
We all knew that Roger Waters, he's not going to put together a bunch of love songs, right? He's not chasing what's going on the pop charts.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his own vision. He is a visionary. And you figure that The Wall was not only really successful, but it's, I don't know if I want to say seminal, but it was a generational epic, right? It was, mm-hmm. It kind of defined not only an era for the band, but kind of what's going on in people's lives. Like, people can relate back to what they were doing, where they were kind of in their lives when The Wall came out, when they got the record, or maybe when they saw the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And since Roger formulated the idea for The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, the same time he formulated The Wall, you right. figure, well, this must be pretty good then, right?
Based on that hypothesis, yes.
Yes.
However, so here's what I'm a little confused about now. He had both of the ideas at the same time. I guess the story goes he took both of them to the band and said, we can do either A or B. We're doing one as a band. We're doing the other. I'm doing the other one as a solo album. You pick it. And then there was something about how Gilmore thought that the music was stronger on Pros and Cons.
Mm.
The only thing I can think of is that if all of those things are true, what he brought originally that became The Wall was not what you fleshed heard out at the end. Yeah. There's no way. There's absolutely no way you can tell me, oh yeah, this is way better. It's not. I don't think anyway.
I know.
It's just missing all of the Pink Floyd, and I would guess David Gilmore touches to it. It's not the same thing. I would love to hear the original demos for The Wall stuff then.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but doesn't that just show you that without the other guys in the band, that he's flailing around? I mean, look, I saw an interview with him, and I don't know when it was from, but he's like talking about playing the bass.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I don't care to be a phenomenal bass player. It's not like something I do and I practice all the time or want to get better at. I'm about, you know, creating the story and basically saying, I don't want to be a good musician. That doesn't interest me, which kind of comes through in a lot of things. And it's also like digging it. Why do you like David? Just because he's so good at his instrument. He's not writing these lyrics about religious leaders and corporate leaders, you know, screwing you over and the world turning into one enormous prison. It's like, because not everyone wants to hear about that, Roger. Not to mention, if you can emote through your instrument, you don't have to say all these horrible things, you know?
Right. So that's another point, too, that I wanted to bring up. So he brought this to the band in 1978.
Or even 77, maybe, okay. But yeah.
In 1977 or 1978, he was like 34 or 35 years old. And you already have this epic about this person having a midlife crisis and all of these things. Like, what the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah.
At 35, you should be like, the world is the greatest place on the face of the earth. Every day is awesome. And you're like, oh, boo-hoo-hoo, I'm crying about all this stuff.
Well, that's what he does.
Clearly.
Mean, that's what he does. I mean, my mother lost her father in World War II also. The difference between her and Roger is she didn't run around whining about it every single day of her life. Right. So, yeah.
The other thing is, at some point in time, perhaps you may want to realize the fact that you're not very good at a certain thing.
Right.
And so I'm looking at this, his Wikipedia page, and apparently I knew he'd been married a couple of times. He's been married five times.
Five times.
Yeah.
And divorced about, five times?
Correct. Yeah.
Or is he, no.
Oh, no, four times. He's been married five times, divorced four times. One of the times was about that 77, 78. So that's probably where he got this from. But yeah, at a certain point in time, maybe it's you. Maybe you're the hard person to deal with. I don't
exactly.
know.
Exactly. Could be. He's obviously very smart. No one's denying correct. That he's an intelligent man.
Mm-hmm. I think he just needs help to focus what he's got and perhaps smooth out the edges that are a little rough.
Well, he's just trying to prove all the time that he's smarter than you.
Mm-hmm.
And from the more favorable things that I've seen is that he's not only very intelligent, but he's very driven. He's very focused, right? And he's like, he's got to get everybody in line. But he's kind of the megalomaniac that he rails against, you know, and stuff like The Wall and animals and stuff like that. I mean, look at his Wall live album. It's a huge picture of his face over the entire stage. I mean... Zeke Roger, you know, I mean, that's what it looks like to me. So I it's shocking to me, you know, that he doesn't see that. Yeah. Married five times. You'd think after the third or fourth, you'd be like, you know what? I'm good.
Yeah.
We can live together.
Right.
You know, let's forget all the prenups and all the lawyer nonsense. And
or at some point you say to yourself, hey, wait a minute. This might be my fault. I think that maybe it's something with me that people can't put up with.
And on some of those scores, he has come around. You know, when he sued Pink Floyd for using the name, and he's like, fine, you can use the name, but you can't use any of my songs. And they're like, anyone can use any of your songs live, Roger. I mean, anyone can do it. And certainly we can do it. And then he came back to say, which I was wrong about. I was wrong to say they couldn't use my songs. He didn't want them continuing with the name because he thought that he had contributed so much to it that without him, it wasn't the same thing. You shouldn't be able to use the same name. And there's some people who to this day agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
But people leave bands all the time and the bands carry on. You're not that special. And as you say, because you're not an extraordinary bass player, it's not like they're going to miss you musically, right? Mm-hmm. You're playing. Do they miss your lyrics? Yes, I'll give you that. That stuff from Momentary Lapse and Division Bell, it's a little softer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more about relationships, right?
Right.
And Roger doesn't write songs about relationships because then the song's not about him. Then it's about someone else. And he can't have that. So, I mean, you're right. You would think that given they both came up at the same time, Gilmore's like, maybe it was just a little more fleshed out at the time, the pros and cons versus The Wall.
Mm-hmm.
But Pink Floyd made the right decision in going with The Wall.
1,000%.
But see, then The Wall's huge, right? It's like a double diamond album. It's the biggest selling album of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's this extraordinary story. They make a movie about it starring Bob Geldof. It's kind of a cultural phenomenon, The Wall.
Mm-hmm.
And with the exception of Comfortably Numb, it's basically all Roger's doing.
Right.
So he feels pretty pumped up, like, yes, I am the man. And I can understand why he would think that at that time.
I would agree with you. Yes. However, as we've mentioned before, it seems like even though The Wall was written 99.9% by Roger Waters, or that's what it's credited to, I have a feeling that a lot of the songs were shaped by the other musicians in the band. Whereas now, or on this record, there is no band. It's Roger Waters, and you do what I tell you to do.
Right.
And there is no, hey, why don't we do this? Hey, why don't you shut up?
Yes.
Because apparently wasn't there some story too about how like they started playing this live and he wanted it to be the same every single night. You play the things the same. And people were just, especially Eric Clapton was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like this is not fun anymore. This is super rigid. I don't like this. This is not what I do. Have a nice day.
Right, exactly. Eric could go out and he's got a lot of great hits from over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to do like the main riffs and the chords and all that the same. But then when it comes to the solo, the beauty of it is that it's a little different. You might get something special on one night or the other, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah, we can get into that. I mean, he obviously gathered around him a lot of serious talent to help make this happen. And probably it was like, hey, you're losing this extraordinary guitar player, David Gilmour. You better have somebody big time to fill in. And Clapton was kind of like not sure what he was doing at the time. I feel like maybe he was getting cleaned up from alcohol at the time or something like that, or was finally kind of getting through some of that. So we got Eric Clapton. Now, that's a huge deal. But Clapton has a sound that's not very proggy. It's very bluesy, right? So it's going to be a little bit different. But then when you see there's Raphael Ravenscroft, there's Michael Kamen, who also did stuff on David's solo album About Face. You know, there's David Sanborn, who's, you know, extraordinary saxophone player. At the time, we best know him for being on Late Night with David Letterman, but he's been on so many different albums. He's got Ray Cooper, one of George Harrison's good buddies, doing percussion, you know. So you would think, all right, he's got something going. He's got a lot of talent around him. And he was kind of thinking, well, look, so I don't have David and I don't have Nick. I've got Eric Clapton and I've got Andy Newmark on the drums, and he's great.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference? Like, there's a big difference. And if you were a better musician, you might understand that. Instead of the guy who creates this epic, horrible world and just dictates what everybody does.
Right. Yeah. If you were to loosen up control a little bit, this is still your show, but hey, I've got an idea on this. What do you say we try this? No, just like it's written. Okay.
So the concept, ladies and gentlemen, who are still listening at this point, is that a guy is having a dream about basically having an affair with his wife, you know, on his wife, from his wife. He's fucking around on his wife.
Right.
Which, given that he was getting divorced and remarried and divorced again, it may have been a true story. But it's all done in real time, right? So the titles all start with a time. 4:30 a.m. And then in parentheses would be like, quote unquote, the name of the song. So it's 4:30 a.m. parentheses. Apparently they were traveling abroad. It's 3 minutes and 12 seconds long. So then the next song is 4:33 a.m. Running Shoes. It's 4 minutes long. So the next song is 4:37 a.m. Now that's clever, Roger. You get clever points. Okay, but it's obnoxious too. Okay, you know, it is, you know, and apparently there was a 5 second or 8 seconds, something like 5 second pause between when you would flip the record or flip the tape, you know, between those songs. But then on the CD, they didn't keep the pause in there. It kind of ran together. And so that made him all upset because now they're not getting the real effect. I'm like, they're getting it, Roger. It's not as cool as you think it is. But it also leads to, honestly, to me, you can't really tell one song from the other for the most part.
It's like it's one big song.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's parts of one big song.
One big bad song.
But to back up just a little bit,
okay,
are we keeping score between David Gilmour's About Face and this record since they were both released?
If you like, yeah.
Okay, so the first point between album covers, this one gets it 100% over David Gilmour. I'd much rather look at a half-naked woman than David Gilmour's face pointing the other way.
Yeah, the album cover is probably the best part of the album. I don't see what else would be.
Do you remember seeing this?
Like, absolutely. And that's why I was always curious about it. I'm like, first of all, that's Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. Mm-hmm. This is what he does after he leaves Pink Floyd. And usually when a member leaves the band, they have some stuff built up, stuff that, you know, didn't make it into the last album or two. Plus you've got some feelings about going off on your own. So that stuff usually comes through in the music. So I'm like, that's interesting.
And the fact that it was, called The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. You're like, what does that even mean? Like, it's kind of, ooh, that's funky. What could that possibly mean? Yeah, and then you see the cover, which I was always mad because most of them have the black bar over it.
Well, right. Yeah.
And really, like, that's really what we're going to be upset about.
Of course, that's another thing that pisses Roger off, right? It's like, you know, she looks amazing. She's in great shape. And then they put the sticker over it, which is ridiculous. And I'm like, well, some people don't want naked women. Right. Where little kids can walk by and see them. We can't have that in Walmart. By the way, her name was, she was an English soft porn star called
Lindsay Drew.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing he filmed her from behind is all I'm going to say about that. Because her backside is why she was in those movies and her face is not. Anyway, and I've seen some of her quote unquote work. I guess I had to in the interest of doing research, I had to go see what it was all about. And David's album didn't know what it was doing, what it was going for, right?
He
wasn't sure. It's like, am I going to be blues? Am I going to be pop? Am I going to kind of follow this prog thing? He was kind of dipping his toe into different things. Mm-hmm. So as far as I know, Roger had focus and an idea, was in charge. That the album makes more sense than maybe David's did, which was trying all sorts of different, throwing stuff at the wall.
Yeah.
You like this? No, you won't like that? Okay, what if you like this? You know, and it was a little more together, I would say, than David's was. However, David's has songs on it that are listenable. Maybe you might even sing along to some of them.
It's definitely hard. The concept of one big song here with zero, actually, I take that back. I think there's one track on here that actually has a chorus to it. So it's just him kind of droning on. And after a while, you're just like, I can't take this anymore.
Yeah, it's either him whispering, what if I weren't such an asshole my whole life? And then he goes, but I am an asshole because my daddy died in World War II. That's what he's got. He can't sing. He's not a singer.
Right. He's a good, like, we go back to the wall. He's a good second. Like, he can sing the other parts that Gilmore doesn't.
Right.
He needs somebody else to sing something else on this record because his voice over and over and over again gets to be like a cheese grater.
Yeah. He's not a singer. You know, it's just not melodic. It's either whispering. He's basically talking.
Right.
Talking
or out screaming at lines. You.
Or he's screaming it, you know. And,
yeah.
And there's a lot of words in there. I mean, you could read some of the lyrics. It's like, God, really is telling a story. He should have been a writer of books or novels or movies even. Mm-hmm. You know, he could write screenplays. The Wall, of course, he was very involved with the screenplay for that. And they were going to make a movie for this. And they had some scenes and stuff put together. And thankfully, it was scrapped.
I think probably the lack of album sales contributed to that.
Hi, this is Gary Kemp.
And this is Guy Pratt.
And you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London
podcast.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Yeah, but let's go through the names of the songs. I don't think we need to go through each song, the quality of every song, necessarily. Okay, it's 4:30 a.m. Apparently, they were traveling aboard. 4:33 a.m., running shoes. 4:37 a.m., Arabs with knives in West German skies. So we still have that Cold War thing going on.
Correct.
4:39, for the first time today, part two. See, you don't put part one first. Gotta put part two first. Okay. That's how clever I am. If you don't get it, you're stupid. 4:41, sexual revolution. That's when he's really kind of with the girl he picked up and doing the fun stuff. 4:47, the remains of our love. It's like, well, can we make a go of it? Yes, let's just go out to the country. Mm-hmm. So 4:50, go fishing. Yeah, you're in the country. That's what you do. You fish. 4:56, for the first time today, part one. Oh, I'm so smart and you're not. 4:58, done roaming, done caring, done living. See, because it's like Scottish things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Dunny, you know, it's like Glenn Livett. Any kind of a Glenn. Any kind of a Dunn. Done roaming around, done caring about the world, done living. 10:501, the pros and cons of hitchhiking, part 10, which would be the single they released. And they did do, well, the first single. And is, to me, the most song of a song on it. 5:06, Every Stranger's Eyes, which is the second single. And then 5:11, The Moment of Clarity, which is really just kind of a epilogue. I mean, it's just kind of like, now it's over.
Right.
Now I'm by myself.
He's coming back. He's waking up at that point in time and realizing it's all been a dream.
But we can talk about some of the songs. I mean, did you like, tell me what songs that you did like or stuff that stood out to you that wasn't so bad?
I like the first track on here because you don't really know what you're getting yourself into.
Right.
I mean, the Clapton guitar parts are phenomenal. And I think that to me, that's what really saves this, him and David Sanborn, even though there are a couple of times on here I'm like, didn't Clapton and Sanborn do Lethal Weapon? And there are a couple, like, I think I hear a little Lethal Weapon.
Probably so, yeah.
But I like it because he's not trying to play like Eric Clapton. He's just kind of like, it's not my record. Mm-hmm. My name's really not on this. I mean, you know, if you look, you can find it. But maybe I'll just kind of wander around a little bit. So I think he gets to do some things that he wouldn't normally get to do. Sexual Revolution is nice. There's a little solo in there. The Gone Fishing is super whiny. Mm-hmm. And then we get down. The pros and cons are not bad because it's the one that's the closest to a single. There are a couple of things in there where maybe he's a little mad at women just in general.
Could be.
But yeah, the solo in that is nice. And then the other thing that I kind of like is there's a theme in there that acoustic part,
slide
that
part.
It comes back several times. Dun, boom, 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 boom. I'm not doing it justice at all, so it kind of ties it together. But yeah, those are the ones to me that stand out. There are a couple that like I just can't wait for them to be over because they're just windy.
I know. Some notes I have. I agree. Apparently, they're traveling aboard the opening track. Like, they're soft-talking Roger with some acoustic. Should we stop for a while? You know, talk about her dress blew up with a little Michael Kamen string production in there and stuff. That's kind of cool.
Her dress blew up over her head. I said, would you like to come with me? She said, something firing under her breath. And the sun shone down on her lovely young lips.
And then you get into Running Shoes that has a big riff, and then he's shouting Roger, right?
Yeah, to me that's the same. I can't even tell when one I thought that was one track for a while. I'm like, oh, wait, no, this is two. They're very much the same.
I know. But there's some good guitar work for Clapton right. on that. And then there's, I think I hear some moaning from a woman.
Oh.
Some sexual moaning from a woman in there. On First Time Today, Part 2, good blues guitar from EC. There's some soulful backup singers doing the Please Stay With Me.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely got some great soulful women to do the backup for him in a lot of these tracks. And look, some of it's funny because I'm like, am I the only one who doesn't get this? And I know by the sales that I'm not, but some people like it. So I'm kind of going through it.
Did you look at did you just Google search this, just trying to wrap your mind around this?
Yeah. There are
a couple people that are like Roger Waters, masterpiece. I'm like,
Yeah, no, go to Prague Archives. On the same page where you'll say, this is the greatest thing anyone has ever done, ever, you'll also see, this is only for completionists, and this is horrible, and it's the worst thing I've ever seen. So it's not just me who doesn't like it, but most of the people who really like it, you have to listen to it many times because a lot of more things will pop out. And I'm like, based on the first listen, I don't want to ever listen to it again. I understand there's stuff in the background, you'll hear someone's voice saying something that you didn't before. You'll hear a little piece of something that may be a recall back to an old Pink Floyd song. I'm like, but that doesn't make it a good song. It just makes it an Easter egg hunt to find weird things.
Yeah.
That you didn't hear the first time.
Yeah. Do you really want to have to work that hard? If somebody tells you have to listen to this 28 times, I have other things I have to do. I mean, I understand there are songs that I definitely didn't like at the beginning. And then after a while, they grow on you. And this is a good track because mm-hmm. you get to know it. I don't see that happening here. You just have to work too hard and it's too dense.
Most of the people who don't like it are like, at least Clapton provides some good guitar work on here. Mm. The people who do like it are like, Clapton's not as good as Gilmore and it doesn't do enough justice to what Roger's trying to do. I'm like, what's Roger trying to do? Whine about everything?
I would disagree with that. I think his guitar work is awesome in here. No, it's not the same as Gilmore, but that's what you wanted. You wanted somebody different. I think he kind of floats along a lot and adds to it. If you wanted David Gilmour, this should have been a Pink Floyd record.
Well, exactly. And they talk about, this has got funny elements to it, whereas the final cut, there's no humor in that. It's not funny. I'm like, yeah, because it's a Roger Waters solo album. That's why there's no humor in it. It's like, no, but there's some humor in it. And like, all right, fine. And Go Fishing, what he's either speaking or shouting.
Mm-hmm.
There's good slide guitar from Eric in there. It's kind of listenable between his shouting. But there's this one part where he goes, fuck it then, take a cab back to town. And the girls go, fuck it then. You know, it's funny that they would do that. I find that funny, sure. Does it mean I want to listen to it? No, it's not a song, you know. It's this guy telling a story about being asleep and screwing around on his wife in his dreams. I guess I think the most prescient moment comes from For the First Time Today, Part 1. There's a line in there, and I have to admit, I don't like it a bit. That sums it up perfectly, Roger. I don't like your album a bit.
That's your review.
You know,
one line.
I mean, I could easily give it the Spinal Tap Shark Sandwich review.
Yeah, review in two words.
But that would be disrespectful to Eric Clapton and Michael Kamen and David Sanborn, the actual musicians on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you see the video for the pros and cons of hitchhiking?
No, I did not. I didn't know there was one.
Oh, yes, there is one.
Oh, boy.
And it's interspersed with snippets of cowboy movies, including Jack Palance, who appears on the album.
Okay.
As one of the talking, he's like the cowboy.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. He's the Hell's Angel. In the movie, he's a cowboy because that's what Jack Palance is on the movies. He's a cowboy. So he's the Hell's Angel. And in the movie, I'm sorry, the video, there's a biker who comes and grabs a girl who's kind of dressed about like the girl on the cover. But there's also a woman, a middle-aged woman who's in a convertible, and she goes to the gas station and sees this like young man and picks him up and takes him in the car with her. It's kind of what you would expect from Roger. I mean, look, Gerald Scarfe, who did most of the Wall stuff, he did the cover for the album. Mm-hmm. And I think he may have had something to do with the video.
So was that an independent thing, or was that going to be part of the movie and it just ever?
Yeah, it may have been intended to be part of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100% sure on that, but obviously you needed a video because you've got a single.
Right.
So yeah. And during the song, he mentions Dick Tracy. He mentions Shane, the cowboy. You could hear mm-hmm. the kid from the end of Shane going, "Shane, come back, Shane," or whatever, yeah. You know. Mentions Yoko Ono. I don't know. It seems like Roger was John Lennon and Yoko Ono in Pink Floyd to me.
Fuck you. No fucking way.
But he obviously, he doesn't play. I mean, when I saw his solo tour, he didn't play anything.
There was nothing from this, right?
It was mostly Pink Floyd, which you would expect. But it was all his new album at the time.
Mm-hmm. Is it Radio Chaos?
No. That followed up Pros and Cons. It came out in like 2017. It wasn't bad.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Give me the information I want right now.
Is this the life we really want?
Oh, boy.
And it did well. I mean, it went gold in some places. It hit top 5 and top 10 around the world. It was 11 in the U.S. And it had a single on there. It was called Smell the Roses. Hmm. But it was, you know, instead of Wake Up and Smell the Roses, like Wake Up and Smell the Sulfur, you know, Wake Up and Smell the Napalm or the Phosphate, you know, that kind of thing. You know, just an unhappy asshole. Well, what's also amazing to me is that his father died in World War II, but he doesn't seem to blame the Nazis. He seems to blame Jewish people for it, which makes him just so hateful,
yeah,
dude.
there is definitely some pent up anger there. And he's, especially in recent years, not made a whole lot of friends with his political views.
Yeah, he tried to get Alan Parsons, who was the engineer and on some of their albums, including Dark Side of the Moon. Alan Parsons, don't go to Israel. Don't do your thing in Israel, man.
I will not be a party to this bullshit.
And I guess Every Stranger's Eyes was the second one. There may have been a video for Every Stranger's Eyes, mm-hmm. but I honestly just didn't want to watch it.
I'll have to check it out.
Because this does feature Roger, I think. You know, whereas the first one, Roger's not really in it. It's busy kind of telling the story that he wants to tell.
To me, that's the way I understand that track, is it's kind of a recap of his adventures hitchhiking
mm-hmm.
or picking up hitchhikers.
And it's kind of funny in that it's like, it's got the girl singing in the background, "These are the pros." I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I think that's unintentionally funny, that bit right there.
It's ironically
this is kind of funny, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, listen to the final cut. I remember when the final cut came out, and then there was a bit of a movie about it. Maybe it wasn't the entire album, but there's a bit of a movie about it. And I remember I was sick one night on like a Sunday night, and I wasn't going to go to school. Like, my mom already determined you're not going to school the next day. So I'm like, okay, cool. And then I saw on MTV, they were going to show Pink Floyd's The Final Cut. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, cool. This will be neat. I kind of was always curious about this Pink Floyd band. And, you know, now it's on and I want to see this. And I remember watching like it for 10 minutes. Now I was 9 or 10. So some of that stuff's going to go over my head. But I'm like, this isn't Men at Work. This isn't Lionel Richie. What is this?
Am I supposed to like this?
You know, yeah, exactly. This isn't even like, you know, Journey or, you know, this is just... And have you ever seen that one?
I've not seen the movie. I've listened to the record, but not seen the movie.
Okay, yeah. So it's like Roger's sitting there kind of in the dark, at least with his eyes shaded,
mm-hmm.
talking his Roger talk, not singing. And then they kind of flash back. It's like the Fletcher Memorial Home where, like, you know, old veterans kind of go to live out their days or whatever. They're kind of juxtaposing between some of that. And I just didn't like it. And I've watched it since. I'm like, it makes more sense to me now, but I can't say that I like it anymore that I did. I mean, and the final cut, I'm just not a fan. And the people who love the final cut and love this, are you just different to be different?
I would love to talk to somebody who thinks this thing is the greatest album ever just to wonder why, because I think that might be the case. Although I do remember I saw The Wall, the movie, mm-hmm. before I had ever heard the record before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, okay, what is this? Because I don't know. I don't know what's supposed to be happening here.
How did that happen? Did you like go to a midnight showing with some friends or something?
No,
or?
It was like a sleepover at my friend's house. And, okay. and he's like, oh man, you know, he had an older brother and they had a VHS. We got to watch this. It's the Pink Floyd, The Wall. I'm like, yeah, cool. Absolutely. Pink Floyd, The Wall. Let's go. And I just sat there. I was like, I don't know what the hell's going on here. Mm-hmm. And then of course, you know, I got to love it later on. But that first showing was like, nope. I'm not familiar with any of the music. I don't know what's going on here. There are hammers walking by. There's some animation. There's some live action. Okay. I was very confused.
And how old were you?
I mean, I was probably, about that same time, like 10 or 11, probably.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now, you should at least be in high school before attempting to
Thank
watch
you.
The
yes.
Wall. Which is when I first saw it, and then it hit me, and I'm like, oh wow, man, this is heavy duty stuff.
Yeah,
but I could get it, you know. And of course some of it's scary, as it's kind of supposed to be, but because that was so well done, the whole concept mm-hmm. and the arc and the way the story played out. I'm not just talking about the movie, I'm talking about the story of The Wall, you know, on the records. Of course, that, you know, he had Bob Ezrin and he had David Gilmour and he had Dick Mason. He had Rick Wright too, mm-hmm. even though he was kicking Rick out of the band for some reason, probably because Rick can sing better than him. And I love Rick. He's not an amazing singer, but he's better than Roger is.
Correct.
And so then, yeah, I mean, that's what happened, you know, whereas Roger produced this, no Bob Ezrin.
Mm-hmm.
Roger produced this. Bob Ezrin produced David's solo album. You know, and of course Michael Kamen produced the bits that he needed to produce, you know, the orchestra, the strings, those kind of arrangements and that kind of stuff. But he's like, no, I'm in charge. Just had to be in charge.
I think that's his thing. I think you hit the nail on the head there. He has to be, everything has to be done his way. He understands how this should go. He has the idea. He will execute this. You just do what I say and everything will be okay. And that just, it just doesn't translate. I don't think it translates to being a good record, and it definitely doesn't translate to having happy people around you that want to continue on this journey.
No, and look, it did sell pretty well. I mean, look, it went platinum in the US. That's still a big deal. It still means he sold a million copies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
About Face didn't go platinum.
No.
So there he is thinking, yes, I'm doing better than David. I'm mm-hmm. the better, I'm the bigger
thing.
I told you. Yes. And then the tour happened. Now, apparently, if you went to the tour, because he did create like scarf blow up dolls and images and stuff like that. And they played the whole thing like in order.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you went to that and experienced it, it told the story better than just listening to it on your headphones or on your stereo kind of thing.
Okay.
So if you actually experienced it, it made more sense, apparently. But with Roger's ego out of control, he didn't want any promotional items, anything to reference him being from Pink Floyd. It wasn't
okay.
It wasn't like, here's the new album
Smart move.
Pink Floyd, you know, songwriter Roger uh-huh. Waters, or, you know, come see the show of Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. No, he's like, I don't want any reference to Pink Floyd. This isn't a Pink Floyd thing. It's all about me. Don't put it on there. And the halls weren't like half empty. They're like 80% empty. And he lost hundreds of thousands of dollars because he built all these sets of these pieces and then nobody showed up.
And wasn't it like at the beginning, at least there was no Pink Floyd music either. It wasn't like, I'm going to play this and we're going to throw in some hits at the end.
Well, he didn't want to. Apparently he started off with the Pink Floyd stuff and then got into all this stuff.
Okay.
The other thing was, some people were like, oh, this is a new prog masterpiece and Roger was a genius. And then some, like Kurt Loder of Rolling Stone.
I did read this.
Trashed it. And I gotta read this because this is, here we go. He savaged the record. This is great from Kurt. Roger Waters' first official solo album will be of sustained interest mainly to post-analytic Pink Floyd fetishists and other highly evolved neurotics who persist in seeking spiritual significance amid the flotsam of English art rock. Of course, prog rock was kind of on the way, was very not cool by 1984. I can't imagine that anyone else will sit more than once through this strangely static, faintly hideous record on which Roger's customary bite is for the first time diluted with musical bilge. I don't even know what all those words mean, but it's very, very negative to me, Kurt.
I was going to say, I would agree with you. However, it does not sound favorable. I don't think Kurt liked that.
Yeah, yeah. And so but Roger's justifying it. You know, there's a huge gap in communicating the fact that my pros and cons show is a Floyd show, except Eric's on guitar and Andy Newmark's on the drums instead of David Gilmour and Nick Mason. But everything else is the same. It was the same team doing the lights, same team doing production, same sound system. Why don't you like it? He's bitter about it.
Go back to my comment about your relationships, Roger. What could it possibly be? What could the problem be in all of this? Oh, wait, you. That's right.
That's the problem. Yeah. And he's like, Clapton was the one who pushed me out on the road. He's like, well, you've done this concept. You've got to tour it. Then I got on the road. And then Clapton's like, yeah, I want to leave.
Yeah, because you're being a dick. That's why.
Yeah.
Because you're being a taskmaster. We're out here to have fun, not be told what to do and yelled at when it's not exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, give him a little space to breathe a little bit. And then so who was it that took over for him? It was like Andy Fairweather Lowe or somebody like that who took Clapton's place once Eric's like, that's enough. Okay.
I am out.
I've also heard stories, I haven't read it here recently while doing research, but that when they would introduce the band, that Clapton would get a much bigger round of applause than Roger would.
Oh, and I'm sure he was okay with that.
I can't imagine anybody being okay with that. But certainly not Roger Waters, you know. But, you know, they had Mel Collins on the saxophone to do the Sanborn and Raphael Ravenscroft parts. You know, he put together a good band. Yeah, so they offered pros and cons in its entirety, but they had opening with a set. It was like Pink Floyd. It had Money, Welcome to the Sheen, and The Flesh, Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun, Pigs, Hey You, Wish You Were Here, Gunner's Dream, Have a Cigar. And then eventually, Waters even added Another Brick in the Wall. Sometimes he'd do Brain Damage. Sometimes he'd do Eclipse. I think he may have even thrown in Comfortably Numb a little bit. Because people want to hear it. People love it.
But that was after, Clapton left.
I think so.
I would have loved to hear Eric Clapton play Comfortably Numb. Just to see it.
And you can see stuff. You can find it on YouTube. Maybe I encourage you guys to look at it on YouTube. You can watch a show. You can find a concert on YouTube. And see how it all comes together. It's just like, well, I'll let you choose for yourself. I really want to get Eric Clapton's guitar tech Lee on here. What he told me was that he was a very unusual man. We didn't get to talk for a long time about it. I just said, hey, would you come in and talk about the pros and cons of Hitchhiking Tour? He's like, yeah, he was an unusual man. And that's all he would say. He's like, but yeah, we can get together sometime.
I would be interested to hear his take on how the recording went and then definitely how that tour went. Because I'm sure he's got some interesting stories about that.
Well,
especially
yeah,
once it got rolling. Like first couple of shows, probably, hey, no problem. And then that's when the cracks start to come out.
Hi, guys. This is Chris Slade, drummer of AC/DC and many others. And you're listening to the ugly, I mean, really ugly, Werewolf in London.
Excellent. So we thank Lee Dixon, longtime guitar tech for one Eric Clapton, for rejoining us here on the show. We've just been through a bit of a rundown of the concept and the songs itself from Roger Waters, The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. But we wanted to hear something about the tour, because as we had Chris Slade on to talk about David Gilmour's first tour post Pink Floyd, at least post the Roger years, we wanted to see if we get someone on here who knew something about what it was like, because it was very ambitious. It utilized a lot of the same kind of things that The Wall and big Pink Floyd shows would, like the Gerald Scarfe artwork and the blow-up dolls and this elaborate set and some, I guess you call it, state-of-the-art cameras that maybe worked and maybe didn't work all the time.
Well, so, as I say, it was, I mean, God, 40 years ago, it was very, As with most Floyd, Gilmour, Water type projects, you know, they're very, very big, you know. and visionary. And, yes. And this whole concept, the pros and cons of hitchhiking, which I'm sure there are quite a few. I'd never really thought about it. But anyway, so he asked, when I was working with Eric, he asked Eric to join the band. And I've had to refer back to, as I showed you earlier, the tour program, tour notes. But it was a stellar band, you know, Roger, Eric on guitar, wonderful sax player, Mel Collins on saxophone, and Michael Kamen, no longer with us, but a man who, one of the most beautiful people I've ever met in my life, who went on to do some stuff with Eric on an amazing TV series with the BBC called Edge of Darkness. But he also went on to do most of the film soundtracks of the 80s and early 90s, you know, like all the Mel Gibson stuff.
Lethal Weapon stuff.
Thank you, Lethal Weapon.
Did Symphony and Metallica with them, you know.
I mean, he grew and grew and grew, and everybody wanted Michael Kamen, and he became such a really good friend, and sad he passed. But the great Andy Newmark on drums, another guy I've recently got back in touch with, Tim Rennick on guitar and bass occasionally when Roger was elsewhere. Great, great player who also played with Clapton for a while. Chris Stainton on keyboards has just celebrated his 80th birthday last week. And Doreen Chanter, who is a very well-known backing vocalist, and Katie Gassoon, the other backing vocalist, who also went on to play and tour with Eric a long time. So it wasn't like a massive band for this kind of thing, but it was just incredibly complex, you know, like everybody had to play to a click track, you know, which is really disturbing for a lot of musicians, because it's something generally you do in the studio, you know, or something. But so there's always this clock going off in the headphones, you know, tick, tock, tick, and
right,
the click track. And because it was a story, you know, it's hard to musically adapt to something like that, I think. But it was very, very interesting. I can't recall too much of the show because it was the 80s and we were also everyone was totally out of it at the time.
Yes.
I don't mean permanently, I mean, you know, but 40 years ago in this business is it's very, very hard to remember 4 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
But I remember, you know, it was my first introduction to Michael Kamen. And I realized then he was kind of a genius, you know, just an amazing composer, arranger.
Mm-hmm.
It was a strange thing for Eric to do because there was no, you know, no songs where the band get up and, you know, it wasn't like a normal tour, you know.
Right, and they don't jam. It's very much you play...
Very, very regimented, and you're playing to this click track, and you know, as Roger's singing, telling, narrating, living, breathing the story, the rest of the guys are just there for these parts. And one really interesting thing, the first time it ever happened to me, never happened before, I had to change guitars 3 times in one song for a section of the set where it was a slide part. So I can't exactly remember, but just let's say it was a morning, evening, and afternoon, these 3 pieces that were merging into each other.
Okay.
And morning was in the key of, let's say, G, and afternoon was in the key of C, and maybe evening was in the key of D. And Eric's parts were slide guitar on this, but the song didn't stop. You know, it just kept going from morning to afternoon to evening. And so he would play the first part in an open G tuning, and then we'd take the volume out and we'd switch him to the next part, which was, again, a slide part in a different tuning. And near the end of the song, switch him out again, turn it all down, switch him out again.
Goodness.
For the third slide guitar for the third part of the song. It was a massive amount of people, you know, compared to what we normally toured with. And there was so much going on with the production every day. You know, the bits being flown in from Paris, lenses, new cameramen, you know, video bits. And I think eventually towards the end of the tour, it all went in sync and kind of worked. But the stuff at the time was experimental and
right.
Maybe we didn't have enough rehearsal time. It was just another one of those, you know, projects, you know. But at the time, Eric's manager, Roger Forrester, I just say the greatest rock and roll manager in the business, he had said, you know, we're going to go out and do this thing with Roger Waters. I said, I'm in, and off we went and did it.
In the when they were doing the actual recording?
We were just doing the tour. No, none of the recording.
None of the recording. Okay, so on the tour, you were talking about that one piece that had to be pretty disconcerting for Eric because it's not something that he would do regularly, swapping out the instruments and then playing to that track.
No, because most songs you would be playing slide on would stay in the same key, you know?
I was just wondering how somebody who was kind of loosey-goosey with the playing on tour would, how did that translate to being so rigid, like he was talking about, with the click track in your ear and changing these guitars? It must have been disconcerting.
Yeah, was it disconcerting for Eric to have to play to this click track and not have the way to swing and move and improvise like he's used to for 20 plus years at this point?
I didn't ask him, but I would say yes and no, because it had to be played to a click track because that's the way it was, you know. Mm-hmm. this click all the time. And yeah, it would probably be different for him because he's used to starting a song and finishing a song in the same key, you know, whereas this was three different changes for the slide parts, to for the atmosphere, for the narration. It was very, very theatrical, you know. And I don't think the band, I mean, there's a couple of times where they played together, you know, where they're playing in the songs, but it was just something very, very different. You know, it was typically Roger, big production and sort of a lot of narration and a lot of a storyline and a plot and all this kind of stuff attached to it. The dream, you know, you can read all about it in all those sections I showed you in the program.
Yeah, but not a lot of singing. I mean, Roger's either whispering, talking, or he's talking like this because my life was just so shitty because my daddy died in the war. Like, he doesn't really sing.
No.
So much.
But that, again, as I said, we're talking more of a sort of a narrative here rather than singing about it. You know, it's a storyline, it's atmosphere, it's this brooding thing.
Yeah.
You'd have to read a book about it, man. Or you know, even when I found the program today and I looked through the stage sketches at the scale of the thing and I looked through all the different scenes, you know, guy waking up talking to his wife, it's a dream, is it not a dream? It's Floyd, man, you know, it's like, it ain't going to be normal.
No, but, you know, when you do, the first set was classic Floyd before he went into the pros and cons, and you're going to sing Wish You Were Here, not going to sound like David Gilmour. You're going to sing those songs that some Roger sang, but some he had to kind of do himself. And do you remember the crowd reacting, or the crowd being small? We've heard stories that sometimes the halls were half full or less.
Couldn't really comment on it, man. I mean, it was like 40 years ago. You know, there's a lot of people don't get to live 40 years, never mind that. It was well attended, I think. Again, you know, it was a massive production. It was new, it was a strange stage set. You had to come through the stage set. You couldn't go around it. It was all everyone following Roger's vision, Roger's instruction, if you like, and trying to, you know, breathe good music into it. I mean, it's the pros and cons of hitchhiking. You know what it is. You know what it's about. I can't tell you anymore.
Yeah. What about, so you mentioned that's kind of neat that you had to come through the middle of the stage. You couldn't go around. So if you had to hand Eric those other
guitars, had to come through the set, you know, rather than conventionally you're on the wings and this thing, you were behind the set. You know, conventionally guys that do my job are right over there, stage right, stage left.
Right.
Because of the nature of this, you had to come through the gaps that were there, you know. And as I say, the guy would be tuning Roger's bass, then he'd hand it off to this guy Colin, who would then come through the gap and hand it to Roger, that kind of stuff. It wasn't something that I have great memories of musically, because it wasn't that kind of tour, you know.
Right.
It was, and Roger's a very, you know, a very different sort of personality, very opinionated. And as I said to you yesterday when we talked, Roger Waters school, it's like Donald Trump, you know, you either absolutely believe in and love him,
right,
or you absolutely hate him and detest him. There is no middle ground. Oh yeah, he's okay. Oh, I like that. No, it's either you either. And obviously, he has a lot of, you know, over the past couple of years, he's been seen a lot politically.
Yes.
Bashing, you know, extolling his opinion, and he is what he is. He's a very forceful character.
Forceful character and a visionary, but seems to me has been difficult to work with for most everybody who's ever worked with him. I know you can't say...
Well, I told you that little snippet earlier, yeah, which I can't repeat, unfortunately, yeah, but ever since that, I mean, and I haven't seen him for 15, 16 years, but ever since that, you know, every time he comes to the Albert Hall, I'd bump into him somewhere, he'd always be very, very pleasant. And I think it was because I spoke back rather than just kowtowed like everyone else, because he's a bit of a, you know, he's a big boy.
He's like 6'4".
He's not physically intimidating, but he has a sort of a rage about him sometimes. But as I say, last few times I spoke to him at the Albert Hall in London before I came over here, he was very pleasant. pleasant. Just new wife introduced me, you know, chit chat, casual, nice to see you, take care, bye bye. You know, but again, such a that little bit you did earlier, you know, about his, you know, the documented history of his father and what happened to him and the trauma and all this kind of stuff. Well, a lot of that happened to a lot of us, you know, and everybody handles it differently. Personally, my very favorite Pink Floyd song, bar none, is See Emily Play.
Really?
Keep the Dark Side of the Moon, Shine on You Crazy Diamond. I mean, they're all fantastic pieces, but See Emily Play was really, really, really so far ahead of its time. It was just typically 60s and psychedelic and weird and British. Yeah. And quirky, but an amazing little song.
Very Syd Barrett. Yeah, that's cool.
It's not like I have this, you know, amazing, oh man, when they played that particular song from the album or this particular song from the album, because I can't even remember, I couldn't find the album to to reference the tracks. But again, it's a vision, it's a project, it's a Roger thing. It's not really like a conventional record, you know, where you're listening to 12 different songs of different topics or different tempos, you know. It's all about, the whole record is the pros and cons of hitchhiking. Yep. And as I said at the beginning, I'm sure there are many of them.
Many of those. Well, thank you, Lee. We do appreciate you sharing this. And thank you for showing me your tour book here. I'm going to use some of these stills. It definitely helps tell the story.
Well, always a pleasure to work with you guys and take care of the American Werewolf in London from the Scottish dog wolf in Louisville.
Yeah, and then Every Stranger's Eyes, I said there was a video about it. They took stuff that was going to be the movie, put it in there, except they interspersed stuff of Roger, like singing the lyrics or whatever.
Okay.
Sexual Revolution also was another video they released. Again, it was film material that had some footage of Roger playing, singing the song and playing his bass, which he didn't practice much, apparently. So, yeah, I mean, and then he's like, okay, now Pink Floyd is over, right? After that tour, he's like, okay, Pink Floyd's over. I'm out now. So you have to quit. They're like, nope, not going to quit. And by the way, we're going to bring Rick back in, but we can't do it until you stop whining and suing us about moving on without you. I'm sorry. He didn't make that many solo records, though, Roger. I mean, Pros and Cons, this was the first one. Then Radio Chaos, 1987, with KAOS.
Okay. And there was one that when we were in college.
Yeah, it was Amused to Death. It basically had like a chimp staring in front of a TV. I'm like, okay, that sounds very Roger Waters.
Yeah.
And then he didn't make another solo album for a long time. Not till Is This the Life We Really Want? Apparently, he did a Lockdown Sessions album, and of course, he did the Dark Side redo. Have you heard the Dark Side Redux by him?
You know, when you were a kid and you had that 9-volt battery, and you knew you shouldn't put your tongue on it, but you did it anyway because you were a dumbass?
Yep.
That's the way I feel about Dark Side of the Moon redo. Redux. I knew I shouldn't listen to it, but I did it anyway, and I'm like, why? Why would you do this? Why would you mess this up? I'm sorry, David Gilmour, for listening to that.
Yeah, I know. I've intentionally stayed away from it. Like, I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It's like a car accident. Like, I'm sorry that this happened, but I have to take a look at it. Yeah. And I didn't even listen to the whole thing. I've listened to a couple tracks, and I'm just like, this is a bad idea. Why would you mess with this? Leave it alone.
It's that ego, man.
I think that's what it is. This album, it's one of the greatest albums ever made, but I can make it better.
Yeah. Especially without all those pesky musicians.
Correct.
You know, around me.
Right.
The best was when he was on 60 Minutes and it was Steve Croft, I think it was, who was interviewing him. He's like, but I was, you know, worried about the interview because I heard he could be prickly. And then, like, the extra time, he's like, yeah, I heard he could be a prick. I was trying to say that in a nice way. And he said, well, you know, but what about David Gilmour? I mean, don't you miss his musicianship? He's like, no, because I'm surrounded by it. Like, no, it's not the same, Roger. And, you know, you don't have it. You have this vision and this dictator style that works to get stuff done, but you don't have the sensitivity of an artist.
Right. Yeah, you need the edges smoothed out. That's what you need. And also you need somebody to bounce ideas off of. And for the person to say, you know what, I let's try this instead, or I think this would be okay if we did it this way. And you need somebody else to sing. You can't be the only singer.
Gotta have someone else to sing, man. Your voice.
The parts
sucks.
Which one was it? Which track was it where the female comes in? So I've got a note here on For the First Time Today, Part One. It's like, I just said, it's nice to have a female voice for contrast. I'm like, at least there's another voice in there that's taking away from him.
Yeah, absolutely true. So
what do you, I guess the whole thing is, what do you think about this whole concept? I mean, it's interesting to me. I understand, like, I've been in this situation before. You have these weird dreams where you go to these different places and then you wake up. I mean, I'm sorry that it seems like his life really kind of sucked at this point in time, that he's having these midlife crisis, that he feels like he wants to run away from his life. I just can't relate to that. I think that's a big problem for me. It's I don't know, maybe if I'd been divorced or having problems, it would resonate a little more, but it just doesn't.
Here's the thing. I think he's talking about more than just one of his seven or wives or whatever it is, five wives. I think he's also talking about the divorce from his band.
Right. But he's just not in a great place.
But he's never in a great place. Never. There is no Roger Waters love song, Wish You Were Here is the closest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not all Roger, Look, Roger, he's lived to be like 82 years old or something like that. He did finally figure out, hey, I need to build myself as Roger Waters of Pink Floyd or do the Pink Floyd stuff. Because when Radio Chaos came out and he's out there playing theaters and Pink Floyd's got Momentary Lapse out and they're playing football stadiums, sometimes in the same town, I think it happened in Cincinnati. Like, he's playing the Taft Theater. And they're playing where the Bengals play, and he's like, and they're all my songs. I'm like, they're not just your songs, Roger. Even if you wrote the songs or co-wrote them, they're not just yours.
Yeah. And the thing is, you could have been there at Riverbend had you not been such an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. But then he's like, I want that. That's what I want. So he goes out and does the wall at the Berlin Wall with this huge cast of famous people. And then he goes out and tours the wall. I saw his wall tour. It's pretty amazing. The production is unbelievable. It's a spectacle. My wife was blown away by it. Of course, she didn't know the story at all. So she had no idea what was happening. And in the opening scene where the plane crashes into the wall, I was like, oh my God. She's like, yeah, just get ready. She really likes him. I think she thinks he's charismatic. Honestly, this is on first listen. I probably need to give this about five listens to really delve in and really understand everything was going on. After the first one, I'm like, please not again, sir. You can whip my back, but don't make me listen to this again, please. honestly. And it's just the fact that he just has all this negative energy coming off of him. You don't want to like it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it is tough. There are some moments of levity in there, but yeah, it's pretty heavy duty, and it's not something that you can just say, "Hey, I'm just going to listen to one or two tracks on this thing." Like, you have to listen to the whole thing. It's a 45 minute commitment.
Yeah, and look, the concept. Okay, the concept is kind of cool. It's going to be in running time order. All right.
Yeah.
It's kind of ambitious, to kind of pull that off, especially if you're going to pull it off live. Got to give them some points for that. Telling the story all at once. Okay, I get it. But compared to The Wall?
Right.
This isn't even close. But see, here's somebody who gives it 5 stars. It's like, this is the first Roger album I ever listened to. At first, I thought it was a bit boring. But as I kept listening to it, I realized that it was very good.
Mm-hmm.
The music is often bad and never gets as good as any of the Pink Floyd albums. The lyrics are also not so brilliant. But he still gives it 4 stars.
Right.
Oh, okay. I give it a 5 because it's so original among just being plain brilliant. Clapton is unreal on Sexual Revolution, which is very underrated. The whole CD is good and has a lot of meaning. Okay.
So you can say that. You can absolutely say all of those things. It doesn't mean that it's pleasurable to listen to.
Exactly. There's no... one. Appalling. Self-indulgent, misogynistic, tuneless material. It's pretty accurate from what I can tell.
Was that David Gilmour that wrote that?
See, Waters seems to think people are prepared to pay bucks to listen to him get angry about stuff. And his label execs ought to have said, go take a listen to Grantchester Meadows, Roger, chill out, and then come back and do this again. Even Stephen Wilson, who is the prog whisperer who can redo everything and make it better was like, it makes you want to rage, but it's made by millionaires who are nearly twice your age. You know, I found this material unconvincing as it was first released and downright offensive when I listened to it today.
Yeah, there are a couple of things in there where you kind of think, yeah, that lean toward the misogynistic territory.
And I understand how rock stars can go that way, because if it's just, there's always women hanging all over you, right? It's like you go to a new town, oh, Roger, you're so great. And you're like, okay. And then the next town, oh, it's the same thing. It's like, this is all women are. They're just people who hang all over you because you've got money or fame. It's
right.
Like, there are women like that, but that's not all women.
Correct. Yeah. You're not. Yes. It's your job to find people that aren't like that.
And he keeps trying. Yeah. I guess he gets credit for not giving up, I suppose. I don't know. Just make sure that prenup's ironclad there, Roger.
Correct. Yeah. At this point in time, he's probably got it already ready to go. He's already signed it. I just need you to.
If you start dating him, he's got some paperwork for you to sign. But if you want to get married, whoo. That's okay. He's about to retire. This is his last tour. He's quitting the road. And
I mean, he's what, 80, what, one, 82?
One or two. Old? Yeah, he's pretty old.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you say five more times. I doubt I'll ever listen to this again just because it's a commitment. And I didn't really like it that much. But I'm glad we did it, because now I can say I've listened to the pros and cons and I can weigh in with anybody who wants to talk about it.
Exactly. And I have my opinion now.
Correct. Yeah, I've seen it, but I've never really heard it before. No, I've listened to it enough now to tell you exactly how I feel.
Right. Yeah. I don't have to say, I bet that sucks. I could say, I know that sucks. We thank Lee Dixon, Eric Clapton's longtime guitar tech, for coming in and give us a little flavor on the pros and cons of hitchhiking tour with Roger Waters. It's an interesting time in rock and roll. It was an interesting time in the history of Pink Floyd. And as it turns out, a bit of an interesting time in the history of Eric Clapton. Pink Floyd were basically broken up. Roger had said in the late 70s, we'll either do this one about the Wall, or we'll do this one about the pros and cons of hitchhiking, and the other one I'm going to do myself. So it took him a little while, but eventually that's what he did. And it was ambitious. And it wasn't really a rock album. It wasn't really supposed to be performed as a rock album. It's more of a musical, more of a play. It's a story. It's not really guitars and drums and bass and vocals and keys. It's this story of a man having a midlife crisis in a dream. Was it real? Was it not? All in real running time. So it's pretty ambitious. That's what the click track was all about, was keeping it on the correct time. But at the end of the day, is it very listenable? Does it have great songs? People can appreciate it for being this epic, for being this different kind of thing, but is it really great music? At the end of the day, I don't think that it is. You get points for creativity. You get points for coming up with an interesting story. But again, Roger wasn't really being a musician here. Roger's being like the director of a play. And despite all the great help from people like Eric Clapton or David Sanborn or Mel Collins or whomever it may be, it just didn't have that same thing that Pink Floyd had. And I don't think he ever really figured that out either. Oh, well. There's a lot to get right and wrong on this one, folks. So we want to know, did we get something right? Did we get something wrong? Did we miss the point? Did we leave out your favorite part? You have to let us know. Email us. It's uglyamericanwerewolf@gmail.com. You can let us know the bands, the artists, the albums, the tours, the DVDs, the books, the rock properties you want to hear us talk about here on the show. Make sure you subscribe and download wherever you get your podcast so you don't miss an episode. The downloads mean a lot to us. And if you're thinking about it, guys, hey, give us a positive review wherever you get your podcast. It means the world to us. It helps us find more rock and rollers like you. And if you send it to us, hey, we might just read it here on the show. Thanks as always to Pantheon Pods for making us part of the family. And thanks to our incredible sponsor, RareVinyl.com. who has plenty of Pink Floyd and Roger Waters related stuff, where you can use code UGLY and save yourself 10% off one entire order. That's it for this week, folks. Lots of fun albums, lots of guests, lots of fun stuff to come in the future. So make sure you stay subscribed and keep downloading. And to all you rock and rollers all around the world, be cool and keep doing what you do to keep rock alive.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.